Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, we're going to complete our two-part multi-unit franchising series. And, of course, it is not a coincidence that we are having this series as the multi-unit conference is going on in Las Vegas, Nevada. And, a matter of fact, today, my guest is Tom McCourt, VP of Franchise Development and Real Estate Development at CC's Pizza, who will be talking to me live from the multi-unit conference. Would like to thank last week's guest, Michael Manzo, Chief Operating Officer from Jersey Mike's Subs. We talked about unit economics. We talked about culture. We talked about a lot of different things. If you have yet to listen to that segment of Franchise Today, please go online to blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow, and you'll be able to access it on demand or download it at your convenience. Next month is really an exciting time for Franchise Today. Matter of fact, April and May, as we start our fourth annual franchise legal series. That'll be 9 weeks in a row of some of the leading legal minds in franchising today. And we'll be setting the schedule of each attorney that will be a guest sometime the beginning of next week. Next week's show, actually, on April 4th, will be a recap and a summary of the previous 3 years. We'll have some tidbits from the different attorneys that have been on. We started out 4 years ago with four parts in a series, expanded it to seven the last 2 years, and then this year will be nine. Of course, one of them will be a recap show from the previous 3 years, and then we'll have 8 weeks in a row, culminating at the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington. We'll have a recap show at that point. And then in June, we shuffled the deck a little bit, and we'll be talking about the franchise business model. We'll start off with franchise development. We'll have a second segment that'll be about marketing, both from a consumer standpoint and from a franchise candidate standpoint. Another segment will be about technology. And then, of course, we'll also talk about operations support and training. And then as we lead into the summer, we're really starting to put together quite a lineup for our first annual Franchisor Spotlight Series. That'll take us through July and August. It'll be really great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to it as well. And remember, it's not promotional. It's all going to be about best practices that some of these emerging and experienced brands have brought to the table to get them to the level of success that they're at today. And of course, I do want to shout out to all my friends and colleagues at the multi-unit conference. Wish I could have been there, but travel elsewhere. Just got back from the East Coast, prevented me from doing so. A couple of franchise events coming up. Of course, we have the Franchise Finance Conference in April by Franchise Times. That will also be in Las Vegas. I hope to be there. And then in May, I'll be on a panel at the first FranCamp that will be sponsored by the IFA. That will be in Atlanta. I think it's the third week in May. And then, of course, in June, there's the Consumer Marketing Conference. There's IFE. There's a lot of exciting things going on in franchising today. To all my Jewish friends, happy Passover. To all my Christian friends, happy Easter. And we'll get moving with today's show. Thomas McCourt entered the restaurant industry as the busboy at the age of 15. And by the age of 16, he had worked his way through dishwasher, potato cook to line cook. After leaving the restaurant industry, he focused his attention on college and becoming a PADI dive instructor. With a degree in finance from the University of North Texas, Tom briefly worked as a financial analyst before starting his own company as a manufacturer sales rep for multiple dive equipment manufacturers. After 9 years of sales and, of course, the Internet coming on, Thomas re-entered the restaurant industry as a real estate manager for Tricone and, of course, as most of us in franchising know, later to be known as Yum Brands. And over the next 7 years, he supported both corporate and franchise growth for KFC, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut. And after multiple promotions, Thomas left Yum Brands as a franchise development director to join TGI Fridays as their senior director of franchise development. And during this time, Tom supported franchisees in all phases of development, from recruiting to market planning to site acquisition. And after six successful years with TGI Fridays, Tom joined CP Homes as their vice president of real estate. And today, Tom is the vice president of real estate and development for CC's Pizza, where he leads both the corporate and franchise development. Tom, welcome to Franchise Today.
Good morning, Paul. How are you doing?
Good, good. So you're at the multi-unit conference. If you would, kind of give us a live perspective of what the feeling is. What's the spirit like? What's the tone like at this year's Franchise Update Multi-Unit Conference?
The tone and spirit here is very, very positive. It is refreshing to attend a conference and even exhibit at a conference and really feel and see the level of interest that people are having to reinvest and to broaden their not only their portfolio, but also to look and talk about the new opportunities that they have and that are available to them. So it's very positive. It's very upbeat. It's well attended. And, yesterday was our first 4-hour exhibit session that we had at the show, and we just had some very, very positive conversations. So a lot of creativity out there, a lot of partnerships that people are looking at, where you have operators partnering, of course, with investors, creative finance discussions, and just a broad range of opportunities that are presenting themselves, again, from a development perspective, as different landlords and different shopping center groups begin to reinvest and go back under construction, which then provides opportunities for restaurants and other retail concepts to come in and expand. So very positive overall.
Well, that's very good. I mean, that's a nice continuation from last year's multi-unit conference, which was very positive and full of excitement. And I think the continuation into this year's multi-unit conference is just a sign of more positive and enthusiastic times for franchising. You know, I was very interested last year. I hadn't attended a multi-unit conference in some time at the sophistication of some of today's multi-unit operators. And, of course, you've had the honor and pleasure of working with a lot of them at Yum Brands. And it's just so different the way they look at things from this global perspective. Of course, they're looking at return on investment. They're looking at unique opportunities. And, of course, as more and more of them diversify their own portfolio, they're not just stuck with one brand and one operating system. And I think that's just, you know, kudos to them for really broadening their horizons. And I know you're seeing a lot of them probably coming in and out of the booth, and hopefully the event is quite successful for you and CC's Pizza.
Yeah, absolutely. And that level of sophistication that they're bringing really surrounds conversations not only about immediate opportunities that are available either for new unit growth or even the opportunity to buy cash flow from the purchase of existing restaurants, but broadly going past that and looking at, okay, what are my development opportunities if I'm going to buy X number of restaurants or if I go into these areas? So a very strategic way of looking at not only the present opportunities, but the future opportunities of growth with the brand. And that's very refreshing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And today we named the show Location, Location, Location. Of course, we're talking about real estate development, which is really such a vital part of successful franchise development and specifically successful multi-unit franchise development, especially if you're a brand that's dealing with a sophisticated multi-unit franchisee from some of the big boys like Yum Brands that are that have been known to have some sophisticated site selection and market planning and mapping and profiling. So having been with Yum Brands, and a lot of our listeners, Tom, are really with young and emerging brands and have never experienced something at the level and sophistication a McDonald's or a Yum Brands or a Burger King or any of the other big box operators. In your mind, seeing this from that perspective, how important is the whole real estate development aspect to franchise development, and then, of course, specifically to multi-unit development?
Well, it's so critical and so vital to the success of the brand, but more importantly, the success of the franchisee. Being able to represent or partner with a company and be a franchisee with a company that's invested into psychodemographic analysis, market planning, is so critical. Because as we look to develop new territory, working side by side with our franchisees and providing that data, we want to ensure that when the franchisee goes in and builds that restaurant out, and then ultimately opens that restaurant, that they're positioned for long-term success. Long have gone the days of if someone's interested in going in, okay, great, let's sign a development agreement or a franchise agreement and let's get their restaurant open and hopefully they'll be successful. It's really about, strategy, leveraging the resources that you have, not only from a high level, from a demographic standpoint, but all the way down to going out and kicking the dirt and really getting the feel of the community. Because that long-term success of that franchisee is just going to pay huge dividends over time, not only for the franchisee and his bottom line, but, of course, also for the franchisor. So it's very, very critical.
So it's safe to say that gone are the days of hopping in the car, a franchisee hopping in the car and finding a corner and saying, yeah, I think this will work.
Yeah, some of that it certainly still exists out there, but it's really being able to wheel that franchisee back in and harness that aggressiveness and just assure that that decision is the right decision. So what do you look for? First you look at the core brand demographics. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in putting together a psychodemographic model that really looks at the core correlations that resonate with CCs. And what are those? We have certain demographic criteria that we look for. So as we go out and we put together a market plan, and market plan is basically if you take a DMA, say Salt Lake City, and you run it through, and you run it through your model, your psychodemographic model, and it's going to come up with trade areas. And we reference the trade areas, basically we could call it an intersection. Does it have to be really that intersection? No, it could be within, say, 3 miles within that intersection. But you identify trade areas. You capture all those trade areas on a spreadsheet. You jump in the car. You go out and look at those trade areas and validate them, not only around about the opportunity and the feel and consistency with what the demographic information is saying, but you also look at real estate availability. You look at deal economics. So you can get a high-level look through conversations with a broker to understand, is this an area that does make sense for the concept? Does it have those four elements within it? Four CCs, some of the critical things, of course, are going to be schools. It's going to be churches. It's going to be opportunities to really become part of the community. So all of those things then are layered in and captured up within this market plan, which is really the roadmap for growth. And that is the basis of how a franchisor would put together a development agreement for a new franchisee coming into their system, and more importantly, for the existing franchisees, identifying opportunities for growth.
Yeah, I've seen so many times where a brand goes into a marketplace and is just arbitrary about their site selection, and before they know it, they have 5 locations. And because they're not properly placed, actually diminish the ability to totally capitalize on the market, because now by putting 3 or 4 others would be too close to this one, too close to that one, not taking into consideration some of the natural boundaries as well as some of the boundaries such as highways or, or like in Houston, you know, bayous where you have a street that just stops and then continues, you know, two city blocks on the other side of the bayou. So really, it does take planning. And as I said, we talk on the show to a lot of young and emerging brands that don't have the level of sophistication at their fingertips, meaning, you know, a lot of times, you know, human resources, not to mention some of the technology resources available. What advice would you give them to be able to come close to delivering the type of process that you're delivering at CeCe's Pizza that they would be able to do, whether it be using technology, whether it be using outside resources such as brokers or other real estate agents? What advice would you give them starting out, let's say, with a brand that only has 10 or 15 locations today?
Well, I guess my advice would be to go to the franchisor and I would ask for what are some of the core demographic correlations that emulate success criteria for this brand. You know, 10 to 15 is still an opportunity to say, okay, out of the 10 or 15, are all of those restaurants performing or exceeding your expectations? If they aren't, then take a look at the ones that are, but also take a look at the ones that are underperforming and try to look. You know, is it, you know, you could pick the perfect trade area, and because of site availability or deal economics, instead of being on the going home side, which would say for a certain concept would be the place you'd want to be, you're on the going to work side, and that could be critical. Another key point that a lot of people miss in site selection is they'll drive around and look at it with a broker during the day, maybe have lunch in the area. You really need to spend the time. This could be thousands, could be millions of dollars that you're investing in this concept. And you want to ensure success with every restaurant, or at least leverage your resources and spend the time and do your due diligence to really reduce the amount of risk that you would have with making a wrong mistake. What does that mean? That means going out to the trade area, not only during lunch, but also going out at dinner. Also then going out on a Friday night or a Saturday night. What happens after 9 o'clock? Does the, like they say, does the sidewalks roll up? Or is there kids hanging out in the parking lot? Is it a little social place? You know, is that good for your business or is that bad for your business? Look at access. Another thing that people miss from time and time again is parking. Is there really adequate parking? So look at the other tenants within the retail center, and then go back out during their peak hours and understand what is the availability of parking. And then how would your customers be able to come to your restaurant or to your retail business if the parking lot is full? You know, where would your employees park? What is, and then another thing that is missed a lot is just access and visibility and signage. Are you going to have a prominent place on the monument sign or a pylon sign? Or is there signage restrictions which would keep you from being able to promote your business? Access, you know, is access direct into the center? Do you have to maneuver around? Is there cross-access easement? Is there dead-end parking? All of these things are looked at because those are the things that affect customers when they think about going to your place of business. And then, of course, visibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, yeah, visibility. So critical, looking at it from multiple directions, looking at it from the stoplight, looking at, you know, just put yourself in that your customer's seat and say, okay, are they going to be able to find my my restaurant or my business? And is it visible when people are sitting at a stoplight, or does the traffic back all the way up, preventing my customers to be able to turn into my parking lot? So all those things are so critical for the franchisee really to do their due diligence. So without those tools, which are again just a tool, you need that high level due diligence that occurs by just spending time in the trade area and really getting a feel about what's going on, and then talking to the people within the community too. You know, if you're buying an existing business, what is the thought, not really the thought process, but what do people say within the community about that business today? You know, is it positive? Are they saying it's misrun? Is it very dirty? You know, you can get a good feel by just talking to people, whether they're in nearby businesses, at your local, say, 7-Eleven or convenience store, and really get a feel of what's going on within the community.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of times what we see is what was once a popular and vibrant shopping center all of a sudden going downhill for a variety of reasons, whether it be because the shopping center is just physically run down and needs a facelift, or just down the street a new one is opening up or has opened up, and there's been a big shift, of course, population shift as well. There's a lot to be taken into consideration. You know, everything that you said, I hear it resonates well. How challenging is it when you go into a new market or into a market and the locations that you're picking are brand new? They're under development. It's a new shopping center. Maybe you get in at the ground floor and sign the lease even before the shopping center is completed, and you don't really know what the traffic patterns are. Well, you know what the traffic patterns are today, but you don't know what the projections are. How much of this is feel, and how much of it is really hard analytics?
Yeah, you really have to have a clear understanding of not only the shopping center, the tenants, the mix, but also what else is going to happen, say, within that trade area. What's going in across the street? What's going in next door? People may know, but they may not know. A broker has a really good line of sight of really what is going on within the community, and I would certainly leverage their knowledge. Not only with the existing center, but surrounding centers. The Chamber of Commerce or the Economic Development Group or Council within the community will certainly have a line of sight as different developers go in for permitting. So that's a good source. But one of the things, as you go into a new center, and say you're going to be putting a restaurant in a new center, and they're building a new mall, and outside the mall they're going to have a ring road. And they have 10 different pad sites that they're going to put restaurants on, or a variety of different businesses. You really have to look and say, okay, if when this mall opens, it's going to attract X number of people that are going to come from surrounding communities, and there's going to be 10 new restaurants, and we're going to be one of those 10. And then you can talk to the developer and understand when the site is going to be delivered, when these restaurants are going to be opened. And then you have to really realize that if you're going to now have 10 restaurants come in that are going to, say, offer anywhere from 200 to 300 seats per restaurant, is the slice of the pie going to be too thin for you? And a lot of times it is. It is very lean on the front end when you introduce that many seats into a new trade area. So that's very risky. Another thing that that people need to really look at and focus on is exclusivity within the center. Say you want to put in an ice cream concept or a pizza concept, and you go to the landlord and you've gone through it because you're so excited. It's a great site. The deal economics are wonderful. There's going to be a strong generator, whether it's a grocery store chain or a retail outlet, big box outlet, and it's perfect. But then you miss the fact that you didn't get a pizza restriction. So the next thing you know, you've invested your money, you're doing well, and another little center is built on another pad within that shopping center, and lo and behold, it's another pizza concept. You know, people have to take the time to ensure that they restrict these other concepts to ensure and to help preserve their viability.
Absolutely, and I've seen that happen quite often. And I know here in the Houston area, I live in the Woodlands, and the mall, of course, has that ring road going around it. And there's one spot that literally six or seven restaurants have opened and closed, and it's because it is right next to the exit out of the mall, The traffic is backed up so far there that by the time people get through it, they're out of the parking lot and have no chance of going to that restaurant spot. And, of course, anybody that has a desire to go there, the traffic is so bad right at that intersection. But yet, when the parking lot is empty, boy, it looks like a dynamite location. So your advice is definitely spot on, I believe.
Well, good, good. Yeah, it's one of those classic sites where you can see it, but if you can't get to it, then really how viable, you know, is it? So yeah, you have to certainly be cautious of that and understand the traffic patterns in and out of a any retail center or in and out of the in and out of your site.
Yeah, I mean, I think the classic example of a miscue, if you would, where somebody purchased a property and didn't look at it, as you said, all hours of the day, is probably when the New York Giants moved to San Francisco, and Stoneham, the owner at the time of the Giants, looked at the property where Candlestick Park was built, of course, during the day, not realizing that at night the fog rolls in and you literally had to wear an overcoat in the middle of summer to watch a baseball game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been times that we have gone out to a site and have spent, you know, the whole weekend there. And basically you go in multiple times during the day, look at those patterns, those traffic patterns, and really understand what is happening within that trade area. Another important thing as you look to develop, say, a concept, whether the support structure is there from a demographic standpoint or not, is to go talk to the other restaurants in the area, whether they're your competitor or not. It really gives you a feel of what's happening in the market itself. So if I was going to develop a new CC's Pizza within a trade area, I'm going to go to the other pizza players in the market. And I'm going to go in there and talk to them. I'm going to go in there and say, my name is Tom McCord. I'm looking at developing some property within this market. Want to know how you guys are doing. And you would be surprised on how much information you can learn. So that due diligence is so critical. If I was also looking to develop a CC's Pizza, not only would I go into the pizza competition, but I'm going to go into the QSRs, so the fast food players. How well are they doing? If everybody is exceeding their expectations, then that's great. That's just going to build confidence. If I go into McDonald's, if I go into Taco Bell and other concepts and they say, no, you know, we're actually below our national average, you know, sometimes they'll give you the weekly number, sometimes they won't. You can always go to Restaurant News and get the national average and use that as a comparison. But if everybody's underperforming, is that really a trade area you want to go into and try to get a piece of that pie? I would steer away from it and focus my attention on other opportunities within the market.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And too many times people fall in love with a location and they just jump at it. I saw that recently in the yogurt space, which, of course, is so competitive nowadays, and had a franchisee, potential franchisee for one of the yogurt brands come up to me locally and ask for, you know, my recommendation was on site selection. And, of course, I said, you know, don't get so enamored with the brand and think it's just going to be the brand that's going to drive people in. You know, you're definitely going to need some high foot traffic, et cetera, et cetera. And they fortunately heeded that advice and got two great locations where just a block away from there was competition has opened and closed several times. And, of course, they flourished. So, absolutely. We're on Franchise Today. We're in the second part of our multi-unit franchising series. My guest today is Tom McCord. Tom, looking at it from the food service side and the non-food service side, in the non-food service side, obviously there's a lot of ways that a franchisee can, you know, watch their bottom line, improve sales. They're more in the business as opposed to some of the larger restaurant franchise concepts where basically you have your marketing, it's getting in the door, they have the systems in place. So really on the front end, trying to make sure that a franchisee in the restaurant space is real, and it really does apply to non-food service side as well, but really negotiates the best possible deal that they can, so that they're not burdened, obviously, down the road, whether it be through the ebb and flow of seasonality. Of course, nobody can really anticipate an economic downturn. But what are some of the things that you would recommend that a franchisee look at on the onset when they start negotiating on lease?
Well, number one, they need to have a pro forma and really understand what they can afford. So many times I have talked to franchisees over the years, and they haven't put together a pro forma. I ask them, I said, how much can you pay in rent? What is your maximum investment as you build this space out? How much, what is your TI dollars that you're going to request from the landlord for build out? And a lot of times they don't know. They haven't sat down and again, done their due diligence. So it's so important on the front end to put together a pro forma, put together your required rate of return. You know, if you want 15% on your investment or better, then factor that into your model. If you're uncomfortable putting together your own pro forma, you know, meet with a financial advisor who can put that together for you, or go online and probably find one. But to be able to do that and then really understand what can you afford. If the concept, say it's a CC's Pizza. So CC's Pizza, our national average right now is just under $900,000. If a franchisee presents a pro forma to me in a market, that say the market DMA or the market sales is, you know, 800 and say it's 900,000 a year, and they put together a pro forma, and for them to receive the required rate of return, they have to do $1.1 million in sales. Then does that really make sense? You know, what are you going to do different? Is this site that much better, or are they going to look at the business and say, I got other avenues of revenue? I got tremendous catering business because I can go out and connect with the churches and the schools. I'm going to have a tremendous amount of to-go business because I've connected and I've established these relationships here. If they can build that case, then it makes sense. But when people are going in to negotiate with the landlord, they need to always look for TI dollars. How much is it going to cost them to convert that space over from the existing, from the last tenant to what they need to today? So they need to first get a clear understanding of what that budget is versus just going in and saying, okay, I need $10 per square foot. They need to look at the triple net. You know, they're going to have to pay CAM. And then CAM, do you want the CAM to go up to, you know, 5% each year? Do you want to be capped for 10 years? Look at all of that. Landlords from time to time will also, from the renewal option perspective, will say the lease amount at the end of a 10-year term is going to be negotiated at that point in time. Well, that gives the franchisee or the tenant no leverage at all. You want to have that you want to have everything clearly negotiated on the front end. So you'll know. You'll know after 10 years, do I want to stay? Because the rent now is going to go up 10%, or it's going to go up 5%, or it's going to be based on a market average. If it's going to be just based on, well, you know, we'll negotiate it, and the tenant and the landlord has somebody else they want to, who wants to come in and pay more money, then they'll, you know, find a way to not renew your lease. So they just need to be very, they need to take their time again, just like with site selection, and do as much due diligence around negotiating the strongest position possible. One of the things that we do at CC's is we have legal assistance. So it's an outside independent group that is very familiar with CC's, very familiar with the franchisees and lease negotiations, and for a nominal fee, that lawyer will work with the CC's franchisee to negotiate the strongest position possible on the lease.
You know, a lot of times, you know, people don't think ahead, you know, franchisees don't think ahead to the end of their lease and miss out on some very valuable T&I even at the 10-year mark. Because if the landlord had a new tenant coming in, and it obviously wasn't a pizza place, and of course there'd be so much branded stuff in there, they couldn't use it anyway. But if a If they rented it to a retail space, obviously there would be a lot of T&I. And oftentimes, at Renewal, I have found a lot of franchisees just miss the boat on that TI at the Renewal.
Yeah, absolutely. They need to aggressively have those conversations with their landlord, because if they're reinvesting back their money into their space, why shouldn't the landlord participate in that? And you'll see some landlords push back, but on the other hand, other landlords will embrace it and say, yes, you know, if you're going to put another $500,000 back into your business, and yes, maybe I can't write a check for, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 to help participate in that, but I can reduce your rent for a period of time to help offset that investment. So, yes, that's an opportunity that I think a lot of people do miss.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're talking about real estate development, we're talking about multi-unit development, and obviously multi-unit franchisees, you know, have a little bit more muscle, especially if they've already got, you know, three or four successful locations in town. Obviously, that's going to play a little bit into potentially a property owner or a landlord desiring to have that type of individual in. I also think another opportunity is to, you know, bring in some of the other brands. I mean, with more and more multi-unit franchisees owning franchises in four or five different brands, there might be some synergy, potentially bringing two or three of them into one shopping center. Obviously, there's a lot to gain by tooting your own horn. You know, Tom, I have been an admirer of CC's for years. I did a small consulting gig with some of the franchisees in the Houston area, oh, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And I sat in on a couple of operations meetings, and I was really very surprised, thrilled, enamored with the fact that they really pay attention to a tenth of a point on costs. And because there's a lot of people that say, oh, my God, you know, $4.99 all-you-can-eat pizza. How could you make money? And yet, of course, CC's is phenomenally successful. Explain a little bit about that mentality of controlling costs down to the tenth of a point and its importance in running a successful operation.
So using CC's as the example, when you look at profitability, you have to first start, you know, you look at food costs. One of the things that we do at CC's is we make all our dough fresh every day. So that in-house preparation is much less expensive and provides a higher quality product than if we were going to sell our franchisees frozen disc or par-baked dough. So by doing that in-house, they can take that dough. They not only can use it for pizzas, but they can also use it for desserts. And that puts them into a very, very competitive position to be able to provide a quality product at a very reasonable price. A lot of people would think $4.99 pizza, you know, how good could it be? But when you think of fresh dough that's made every day, that's not only used on the pizzas, but it's used on the cinnamon rolls and used on other items within the restaurant, then you can say, okay, now I understand. We got a quality product that is being provided at a very valuable, at a very reasonable price. From a cost perspective of, say, ingredients and things like that, CC's has their own distribution company. We have three warehouses. Our franchisees, there's, I would say, 100% of our system buys from our company, and they do so because it's so competitive. We can buy in bulk and provide a product that is very competitive, competitively priced, and allows them to maximize their margins. And you're right. When you're selling a product at $4.99, $5.99, whatever the price may be, depending on the area that you're in, you have to watch everything. You have to watch your cost. You have to watch your waste. You have to ensure that the money's getting in the register and food is not going out the back door. So there's different mechanisms that are being you know, that are put in place to maximize the franchisee's profitability, not only from a food cost perspective, but also labor cost perspective.
From a multi-unit standpoint, how does CC's Pizza look at a multi-unit operator? And let's talk about from a single-unit operator that desires to open a second and third location. How do you look at it? What criteria are you looking at besides the norm, obviously, of having the financial wherewithal to do it?
We at CC's, we look for an existing franchisee who wants to grow. Of course, you're right. We look at them from the financial perspective, number one. Number two is really how are they operating their business today? Are they following the processes and that are put in place that they can leverage? Are they out in the community and building those relationships and are maximizing the potential of the restaurant? When I talk to franchisees that are interested in growing and I hear that passion and understanding that they have for the brand and wanting to say, okay, Tom, yes, absolutely. I understand local store marketing. You can look at my sales. I've got a positive sales trend. I'm doing X amount of dollars in catering business. I'm connected very well, and I want to take this knowledge and understanding and go into another trade area. The question I have then is, well, who's going to lead that initiative? Is it going to be you, or is it going to be somebody else within your team? And a lot of times they'll have somebody within their organization that may live in that town or is connected with that community, so they can go in and replicate their processes that have been successful for them. So it's again, it's sitting down with that franchisee, understanding that level of passion, looking at their level of execution. We look at our franchisees, and we have what we call our OSAT scores, which is overall satisfaction scores. And it's a monitoring system that our customers fill out with regards to their experience at the restaurant. And those are tracked, and we look at them on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis. And that's kind of like the grade for the franchisee. You know, is he an A, B, C, D, or F? You know, if he's an F and he wants to grow, I'm sorry, you can't grow if you're an F. You're going to have to get into that A and B category, and then we can talk. So that gives our field operational team the opportunity to sit down with that franchisee and say, okay, these are the things that you need to work on to ensure that you can maximize and get the highest overall satisfaction score from your customers. So we take all of those components together, and once we feel confident that the franchisee is ready to move forward, then we start to really dive deep into looking at the area that they want to go into. And a lot of times some of these things will run parallel paths. That, yes, they are an experienced operator. They have the wherewithal and understanding on how they want to grow within the system. They've got a proven track record whether they have one or two restaurants today. They're going to have dedicated resources focused on the concept in this new market. And yes, this market is a viable market. So let's go, you know, find some real estate and keep this process moving forward.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned how much and how wide has the franchisee gotten out into the community. How important is it that a CC's Pizza franchisee get out into the community?
It's so important, whether you're a CC's franchisee or another concept. You have to, the owner of the restaurant really does not need to be in the restaurant. They need to be connecting with the community and building those relationships and sending business back in to that restaurant. I had a conversation with one of our franchisees the other day who is just all over that. He meets with the chamber. He's established a lunch school program for pizzas delivered every week. He's just connected with everything that is going on, whether it's the football team on Friday night, not only the home team, but the visiting team. He has just such a strong outreach program. Without that, if a franchisee of ours or other concepts just wait for the customers to walk in, they're going to be average or below average in sales and ultimately probably will not ever see the full potential of the concept.
Yeah, so definitely this build it and they will come mentality is not something that lends towards optimum success in basically any aspect of franchising. So multi-unit franchisees that are successful and established with other brands come over to CC's and say, I'm interested in, you know, building three CC's locations. I'm looking to diversify my portfolio. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've got the financial wherewithal. What type of criteria do you look for with those type of individuals?
Well, we look for success with their current business. So if they have these other concepts, it sounds like they're in a great financial position. From a CC's perspective, we want to go into those concepts, or we want to go into those restaurants, look at them. You know, are they clean? Are they executing to the highest standards? I also want to talk to the franchise prospect and find out, do you have a development agreement with this other concept? If so, how many other restaurants do you have to complete to fulfill that agreement, and when? Because what that does is it puts together and shows a track record of the infrastructure that the franchisee has, and not only being able to open a restaurant, but also to fulfill a, you know, development agreement commitment, much like we're talking, you know, to him about or her to fulfill with us. So that's it's very critical, and it really paints the picture of their track record. And then it's also good to go by, and I love going by and spending time and understanding why the prospect is interested in CC's, you know, and how, and really, you know, look for that passion and understanding of not only how they are going to serve the CC's guests, but how they're currently serving their guests. Because anytime we look at bringing a new franchisee into our system, we want to strengthen the system. We don't want to just bring in another body. So I always ask myself that question, and I ask the franchisee, what are some of the core competencies that you're going to bring into our system that is going to strengthen our system or raise the bar within our franchise community? And I'm always impressed by the answers that I get, because that level of passion and understanding and desire to please the guest is very prevalent. And if it's missing, then we know we need to continue to look and talk to other prospects within the market.
So how do you answer the question, whether it be for a new single-unit franchisee or an experienced multi-unit operator with other brands, when they say to you, Tom, everything seems to be great, but I just don't know about pizza because it's such a competitive space? What is your response to that?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, if I was a franchisee looking to take on a pizza concept, what makes different pizza concepts, you know, unique? What makes them stand out? One of the things that really shines a light on CC's is we basically own the pizza buffet space. You know, with 520 restaurants in 34 states and 28 years of experience, a new franchisee can come in and immediately capitalize on that. So, okay, now they capitalize on that. They know we have all the tools and mechanisms and training programs and senior level experience, leadership qualities. We have the distribution, but what else? CC's is unique because when you walk into a CC's, it's just not a buffet. It's a custom buffet. So that really differentiates ourselves from other concepts. You can go up to the counter, pay your fee, and or pay for your meal, and then go over and someone's going to say, do you see everything on the buffet? Is there anything that could we get you a special request? And you can say, absolutely. I would like to have a pizza with this, this, and this on it. And we'll make it for you fresh, bring it out to your table, and provide it to you at no additional charge. So you can get, you're basically for $5 or $6, whatever the price may be, you're going to be able to get a custom buffet and for the exact pizza that you want delivered to your table. That interaction through the conversations on what would you like and I'll bring it to your table and have you enjoyed it really exceeds a lot of customers' expectations. And those are the qualities that I think really make CC's unique and such a viable proposition for new franchisees, because it does differentiate ourselves from the competition. We're just not another pizza concept that is going to deliver a pizza and hopefully we have some good marketing around it. You know, we do catering. We do not do delivery. We do takeout. We also have another revenue stream that goes directly to the franchisee's pocket, which is our game room. So a franchisee has to look at those multiple streams of income, whether it's the traditional buffet, whether it's carryout, whether it's catering, and also the fourth revenue stream, which is the game room. So all of those really make CC's a unique proposition and allows us to stand out above and beyond the competition.
So beyond it just being pizza, and even beyond the customized buffet, as you said, it really comes down to an experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And obviously that's vitally important with families today.
Right, right. Yeah, if an individual is trying to decide, do I want to go to pizza, burgers, yogurt, what should I do? Do you want to sign up for a proven concept that has the legacy and years of experience that you can immediately tap into? Or do you really want to take a risk on a concept that, hey, you know, is it trendy? Is it being overbuilt? You know, how long are the legs on that concept? Is it going to be around 5 years, 10 years? We've all seen different things occur in the market with the bagels. We've seen it with smoothies.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, aggressive development on within yogurt. Some yogurt companies are doing a phenomenal job. Others are just signing agreements and taking money as quickly as they can. And you're seeing a lot of market penetration around burgers. You know, how many $10 burger concepts can you really have? Some are going to close. We know that. So do you want to just dive into that mix, or do you want something unique that says, okay, CC's? I mean, who owns the pizza buffet concept, and that's us. So it's just a tremendous opportunity, and I'm proud to be able to represent the company.
What and I think a lot of people might not know this. Where did the name CC's come from?
It's actually, that's a great question. It's actually,
I promise not to put you on the spot. I'm sorry, but I was curious.
There is an answer for that. It came from the two owners. It's their first initial of both their last names that started with a C. The two founders of the company, Joe Croce and another gentleman, both last names started with C, and that's how it came about.
Nice. That's really interesting. So as we are wrapping up on franchise today, my guest today has been Tom McCord from CC's Pizza. We talked about multi-unit franchising. We spent a lot of time talking about real estate development. We touched on franchise development. We touched on unit economics. Obviously, we could talk for hours and hours. I'm certain if you happen to be listening and you're at the multi-unit conference in Las Vegas, pop by the CC's group, say hello to Tom. Tom, what's coming down the pipe for CC's Pizza?
Well, we're right now testing new prototypes. You know, our current prototype is 3,600 square feet. A lot of our, you know, if you're out in the market today, you may go into a CC's and say, well, it seems much larger than that. Yeah, some of them are 4,000, some of them are 5,000. But we're really, you know, as rent continues to increase, and as we talked about profitability, as we look at every penny, you know, what is the optimal size for CC's? And we've seen a lot of success around a little bit smaller prototypes. So the new prototype, 3,600 square feet, we're also looking at what we call CC's Express, and that's 2,500 square feet. And we're in the process of securing a site in Texas where we're going to test the first corporate CC's Express, and so we're very excited about that. I not only see that as an opportunity in markets as a fill-in opportunity, but I also see it an opportunity for smaller towns And I also see it as an opportunity for very, you know, markets like New York, where you can't afford, you know, 3,600 or even 4,000 square feet. You know, let's look at it from a 2,500 square foot perspective. You'll still have the buffet, but it's limited seating, and we've made some other changes that we're very excited about. Other things that we're doing, of course, we have a to-go unit. We have 10 to-go units today. We're continuing to test to-go units and feel that is a viable prototype that we're going to continue to roll out and support nationwide. And then we're looking at non-traditional venues. We're working with FC Dallas in Frisco, Texas. We've partnered with the with them and the soccer team, and so we are the supplier of pizza at that arena or that stadium. We're also looking at other different venues. So I've been talking with airport representatives to bring CC's into airports, and that is a long process, but we're starting to plant that seed. We're also looking at international development. So as we look at our partners up in Canada, as well as in Mexico and Puerto Rico, tremendous opportunities for CC's. And again, as I look at the space within those markets, it's very well penetrated with pizza delivery concepts, but no one is really doing the buffet. And so that's where we want to come in and take our proven concept and make that available in these areas and find, you know, viable franchisees to build the concept out for us.
You know, one of our previous guests was Dave Melton, who wrote the book Hiring the American Dream, and of course he's a successful Domino's pizza franchisee. And it's really a unique show, and he's got a unique concept in that he opened up right in New York City, which of course a lot of people think is the hotbed of pizza. But the question I wanted to ask you is, people just entering the pizza space and they're interested in CC's, do a lot of them have some trepidation dealing with a younger workforce and have a full understanding on how to properly manage a younger workforce?
Well, you hit on a key topic that we really haven't dove into, and that's experience. As we look at, and I talk to new prospects entering in our system, if someone comes to me without managerial experience or restaurant experience, I really recommend them instead of jumping into CC's or any other concept that's going to require a higher amount of labor and interaction, is to start off small. Start off with an ice cream concept or a yogurt concept. Learn the workforce. Learn those ins and outs and be able to manage that piece. Learn how to connect with the community. And once you have that experience, then start to talk to CC's and say, yes, you know, I have X number of, say, Subways or Jimmy John's or whatever it may be, and now I want to expand that. I want to get into CC's. I want to get into other concepts. So, yeah, I think it's very important for people to have that level of understanding of the workforce and be able to build that experience gradually and capitalize on it as they gain that experience over time.
I think that's fantastic advice that you're sharing that. Well, I told you we would blow through this hour, and we are at the 90-second mark. Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time from the conference and spending an hour with us today on Franchise Today. The information you shared is, I believe, very valuable. Thank you.
Well, Paul, thank you. Thank you for everybody who's listening. And I'll put this out there. If I can help answer any questions for anybody and they want to reach out to me, they can go to our website, you know, ccs.com. There's a franchising section that will ultimately connect right back to me and to my team. We'll be happy to answer questions. If people are just scratching her head and saying, you know, I want Tom to explain a little bit more about something that he talked about, please send me an email or send us a message. I'd be more than happy to communicate and help any way possible.
Great. I appreciate that, Tom. Say hello to everybody at the multi-unit conference for me. Like I said, I wish I was there, had planned on being there, but was unable to.
So anyway, and safe travels home back to the Dallas area. Next week on Franchise Today, we'll be starting our legal series with a recap of the last 3 years. Until then, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is...